Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, March 15th, 2015. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Let everybody know why you like it. And it will mean a lot to me and will make me feel good about a lot of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can like the show on Facebook and you can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, Chris Lambert, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 110 of the show. It's just going to be a solo episode. It's going to be me by myself in my apartment on my couch with my laptop open, some tabs open, and also my heart. And this is me. This is me, you guys. I remember when I was in grad school, I was at a conservatory, so we would watch the undergrads and everybody do their shows. We'd have to go see all the plays that would go on, and I remember one year the freshman class would do these like showcases, and one of the themes was "This is me, this is the world." I think they said that, like, that was the mantra throughout the whole show. And they would say some really, like, heartbreaking, revealing shit about in life or what happened to them. And they would just be like, my mother sexually abused me, and I still carry that with me. And then they'd be like, this is me, this is the world, this is me, this is the world. It would be really... You know, it was pretty intense. But I don't think things will be this intense on this episode. I want to thank everybody for all of the compliments about last week's episode. I got texts from friends, phone calls from friends saying that they liked the show and they really enjoyed Ray, and it Ray was a good guest. She was very good, and it was good to hang out with her. And I'll have some more interviews in the, what do you say, in the barrel, loaded in the barrel, in the chamber, maybe. So I think maybe I will we'll have some more for you in the near future. I've got my eye on some people that I want to sit down and talk to, and I think they'll be interesting for you. This weekend has been really, I got to chill this weekend, and I was very thankful of that, because last weekend I was in upstate New York, and I was doing shows, and I was doing a lot of driving. And I did say, if any of you follow me on Twitter and Instagram, I made my first hotel waffle without any adult supervision, and it turned out great. I took a picture of it on Instagram. I'd never done that before. I don't think I've ever had a hotel waffle before. And used a waffle maker at all in my life. In my 35 years of life, I had never done such a thing. I was a waffle making virgin. The closest thing I've done was put some Eggo waffles or some Aunt Jemima waffles into a toaster, and you know, toast them and warm them up. That's pretty much all that I did. So this one, you know, you pour in the waffle batter. And this was at the Comfort Inn and Suites in Queensbury, New York, and very nice hotel. And you put in the waffle batter into the waffle maker, obviously, you guys, And it said wait 2.5 minutes. But the thing about this waffle maker in particular was I did that and the timer didn't go off. So I was on my own. I was on my own, you guys. And I was a little nervous. I was scared. I was scared that I was going to burn the waffle or break the machine, and it would be my fault that there would be less people to get their waffles in the breakfast room. And so I had all of that pressure on me at the time, and I was a little scared. I wasn't scared. I ain't going to say I was scared or nothing. I was nervous. How about that? I was nervous, and I said, you know what, Chris? You just go by feeling. I turned it over a couple of times, and I just kind of peeked in and opened the thing a little bit because I didn't want the batter to, like, jizz out. I could have used something better than saying jizz out, but I could have done something. I was nervous that it was going to spill out and it wasn't going to be a good scene. It was going to look like a waffle crime scene. And it ended up being really good. It ended up being good. It turned out to be really nice, and it tasted really good too. So I'm proud of myself. I feel like a real comedian now that I can make a hotel waffle without any fear, without any anxiety. I'm not going to be cocky about it, but I'm just going to say that I've had that experience, and I can do it now. I think it meant a pretty big deal to me because a couple of years ago when Marc Maron did the Just for Laughs address, might have been maybe 3 or 4 years ago, whenever he did it, he would just say, like, he said something about, yeah, we're in hotels, we're making waffles and blah, 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 fighting with our loneliness and all this really dope shit that he said. That just really touched me. I was like, oh, Marc Maron has been in a hotel and he's done this. One of the vets. I mean, I'm sure all comics, but it was just a thing that was just kind of like symbolic of being a real comedian and just like being on the road making a fucking waffle. And that's how I started off my week, making a waffle like an adult. And so I did that, got home, and I did a couple of shows last week, this past week. I did a show on Tuesday, two shows on Tuesday, actually, at one at Stone Creek Bar and Lounge, and that's in the Kips Bay area off of, I believe it's off of East 27th. And every time that I'm in that general area on the east side, its traffic is just a shit show. But then they do have street parking, so that was good. I felt good about that. I mean, you only pay like $3 or $4 when you park on the street before 7 o'clock. So that was cool. And I had some, this is a fat boy thing. All right. I'm actually going to start at the gym. I'm going back to the gym tomorrow. I'm getting my shit together. I'm going back to the gym tomorrow, and there's no excuses. Yesterday I bought, see, I'm prefacing all the fat boy shit. It's really just one fat boy thing this week. It's really only one fat boy thing. I was proud of myself the other day, but then I kind of paid for it. I'll say, cause yesterday I bought some flaxseed. And I'm going to try that in my smoothie tonight and see how that works and see what that does to me. So Stone Creek Lounge, I've never been there, and I did the show Grits. It's a Tuesday variety show that Brandon Collins, friend of the podcast, hosts, and he's the producer of that show, and he had me on, and before that, I got there pretty early, so I got some nachos and like these ground beef nachos. The thing about these nachos, you get like 10 or 12 of them, but the nacho, like the beef and the cheese is melted onto each nacho. and it's fucking amazing. Like, the guy thought I just lost my mind. They were so good, and they were just amazing. Probably some of the best nachos I've ever had in my life. And I ran it as I was leaving. I had a fun set. It was just working on some stuff that I'm doing at the end of the month. Actually, why did I plug this? March 26th, I will be at Levity Live in West Nyack, New York, for the Kevin Longto Memorial Scholarship Fund. It's a fundraiser for that Paul Verzi's brother-in-law who passed away a little over a year ago. And I'm going to be there. Paul Verzi's going to be there. The great Bill Burr will be there, and a host of other amazing comedians. So I'm happy to be a part of that. And so right now I'm just in the process of working on some material that I will probably most likely be doing for that show. So, I've just been working out some material. So, I was leaving this place. I was leaving Stone Creek, and I saw the chef. It was this Mexican guy, this middle-aged Mexican guy, and he's just, and I just walked past him. I was like, "Hey, man," "those nachos were amazing." And he's like, "Oh, okay." Like, he's like, "All right, asshole," you know. But because he could do that shit in his sleep, he's probably just like, "All right, buddy, just okay, Jesus." And so I left there, and I very seldom have two shows in a night. I'm not at the level where I'm good enough to have more than one show a night in this motherfucker, but it's just rarely have I been booked in the city to do two shows. It happened a handful of times, but we working on it. So I had a show at Union Hall in Brooklyn in the Park Slope area, and I was trying to get there. I was hustling to get there. I was doing this show called Cheap Date, and I had to make it to that show. And I was just like, traffic is just a pain in the ass, and that Park Slope area is a shit show, especially since they built the Barclays Center there, and it's just smack dab in the middle of the everything you're trying to get to. So I got there, and when I finally got there, I was like, "Oh God, you guys!" And I had to find parking. Found parking. I get there, and they're like, "Chris, can you close out the show?" I was like, "Yeah, okay, sure, all right." So I closed. I did that show, and it was fun. It's a monthly show, and oh my God, hold on a second, you guys. All right, you guys. So Cheap Date is a monthly comedy show, that they have at Union Hall, and it's hosted by Sharon Paul and Calvin Cole, and it's a monthly comedy show that I believe it costs $5, and it's every second Tuesday of the month. So this one apparently was overbooked. They told me, and hey man, it was so much fun. It was just I think I had only performed in Union Hall maybe one other time. I did the Carrie Doherty, friend of the podcast, had the Geeking Out show that she did, and there was a tape in there for Official Comedy. Anyway, that's a fun room. I saw Marc Maron. Speaking of Marc Maron, he taped his album This Has to Be Funny there, and I went to see that. And it's a nice little room, maybe holds about 50, 60 people, if that's 75, I don't know, under 100 people, and it's in the basement, and it's just like got a nice vibe to it, and I like it a lot. And I had fun working on the new shit. Your boy's getting personal this year, you guys, getting personal with my material. I'm just having fucking fun, but it was a good time. So I closed out that show, And then just driving back, it was a shit show. Cause I was trying to figure out if I was going to go the West Side Highway. If you live in New York, you would know going back the West Side Highway to Jersey. And then I ended up going the Holland Tunnel and it was foggy and it was just a pain in the ass. I hate when they're doing construction. If it's a Friday, if it's a day that I don't have to go to work the next day, I'm pretty good about it, but. And I don't mind, but if I have to go to work and there's construction going on and there's delays, it's just a pain in the ass. And the fog was just horrendous and it took me longer than I expected to get home, but I'm a soldier. I'm a fucking soldier. You guys remember that? What's not Kevin Winslow, the second? I'm a fucking soldier. So I got through it. I powered through it. Then I had a show. Wednesday night at 2A, big effing deal, hosted by Trish Nelson and Beth Hoyt. Beth was not in the building. She was Beth, also friend of the podcast. I'm name dropping, friends of the podcast, people that have been on the show before. So that's pretty cool. She was in LA doing pilot season and working out there. And Trish Nelson was the host, and I closed out that show again, working on some things, and it was a lot of fun. And what else do I want? Oh, and I'll just dive into the movie that I saw. Why don't I do that? Why don't I try to just get in a little chronological stuff, you guys? I went to this new movie theater at this mall in Yonkers called. Ridge, I believe Ridge Hill Mall, or the Shops at Ridgefield, one of those new malls where everything's outside. So after work, I went there to see The Lazarus Effect, and The Lazarus Effect is, I'll read you a synopsis. I want to read, because when you go to the search page, when you look it up, they give you like a blurb. And then they'll try to give you. No, they don't, do they? I guess, you know what? All right, I'll read this. Here we go. The Lazarus Effect, PG-13, thriller, horror, 1 hour and 23 minutes. Medical researcher Frank, his fiancée Zoe, and their team have achieved the impossible. They have found a way to revive the dead. After a successful but unsanctioned experiment on a lifeless animal, they are ready to make their work public. However, when their dean learns what they've done, he shuts them down. Zoe is killed during an attempt to recreate the experiment, leading Frank to test the process on her. Zoe is revived, but something evil is within her. This movie stars Olivia Wilde. What's the other guy's name? Mark Duplass. Is it Jake or Mark? Which one is it? The dude that's got the show that just ended the first season, Togetherness. Mark Duplass. It was Mark. Mark Duplass, Olivia Wilde, Evan Peters, Donald Glover, and Sarah Bolger. Excuse me. I wasn't expecting much from this. I really like this movie. I think Rotten Tomatoes gave it like a 13% or some shit like that. Here's another thing. If there's a movie that you want to see that you're interested in seeing, just go see it. You know, like when I saw it, there were only two other people in there with me. And it was around like 4:45 or something like that. And I really enjoyed it. It was like, to me, it's one of the, I said, like, this is one of the illest Flowers for Algernon movies ever made. And if you haven't read Flowers for Algernon when you were a kid, the education system failed you. But this movie is sort of like, am I sounding like an elitist? Like Dame Dash, but with education. We'll probably get to him a little bit later, but it was Yeah, because it had a it had a mixture of Limitless, Lucy. Those are examples of flowers for Algernon flowers for Algernon movies when somebody gets these like a special ability through some kind of serum or medicine, and then the shit that back and all of it backfires. But this had that, and it was a bit of a psychological thriller. There were twists and turns, and it's a good cast. Like I love I'm a Donald Glover fan. I love Olivia Wilde. Mark Duplass is good. Evan Peters, I don't know what he's been in. I've seen him before. I have to look and see what he's been in. I'll look at his wiki. Have I seen any of this? He was Quicksilver in Days of Future Past. Okay, Adult World, I remember that. He was like the love interest for some chick. Cute chick. What's her name? What's the girl's name? Emma Roberts. Okay, I remember. And movie with John Cusack, Emma Roberts, and Evan Peters is the love interest in that. So, pretty decent movie. Damn. He was in Kick-Ass? He was in Never Back Down, Gardens of the Night. So, he's a guy up on the rise and whatnot. So, he's been in some shit. He was on Parenthood? He's on American Horror Story. If you see him, he might be that dude you see. But, oh, shit, young, I know who that is. But he was good in it. And then Sarah Bolger. I'm usually up on my white girl actresses. I don't know who she is up in here. She's from Dublin, Ireland. What was she in? As Cool as I Am, Crush, The Moth Diaries. I haven't seen anything. In America, I saw... Oh, she was a little youngin' in America. The joint where Jamin Hansu was the magical Negro or some shit. Yeah, immigrants come up. I remember that. She must have been like a little tyke because she's 24 now. What kind of TV was she in? Mixology. I haven't seen that. The Tudors. She was in that. I've never seen it. So she's an up and comer. So, and then Donald Glover, of course. Donald Glover, Mark Duplass, Olivia Wilde, they were all in that movie. And it was good because it does this thing where you know it's going to do, like, it's like, oh, then there could be a sequel. And there probably won't, because I don't know how much money this movie made, but I really enjoyed it. It's one of those movies that you don't have to go to the theater to see it, but if you saw it, you would just be like, oh, shit, this is ill. Like, this is like, if you got it on Redbox, you'd be like, I'm satisfied by this shit. Like, I'm really, really fucking satisfied by this movie. And I think you would like it. I think you would like it. And it was almost, some of the stuff kind of came out, it was sort of like a play, because there were those four characters. It was three guys and two women, five main characters. And then they had like the dean. And then there was a scene where people came into the lab and stuff, but it sort of played, everything kind of played out like a theater production, like a play. Because they were mainly in this specific place and things were going on. And then of course you had all the supernatural stuff happen, but it just wasn't, it was mainly in a confined space. And it reminded me of a film that it's nothing really like, with the exception of just the film, everything for the most part took place in one location. This movie from 10 years ago called Hard Candy with Ellen Page and Patrick Wilson. If you haven't seen this movie, it's really good. It's, I'll read you the, and I own this too. I need to break this one back out, young. This movie, so I'll read you the synopsis. Haley, played by Ellen Page, is a precocious teenager who goes to a coffee shop to meet Jeff, Patrick Wilson, the photographer she met on the internet. Jeff thinks he is in for a real treat, but Haley plays a trick on him. After drugging Jeff and tying him down, Haley reveals that she knows Jeff preys on teenage girls, and she has a plan to wring confession from him. This is more than needed to be read, but when they, some synopsis kind of over explain shit, but this movie is, this movie's really good. Hard Candy. So I would recommend Hard Candy. I recommend The Lazarus Effect. And if it's playing, if you can see this movie for $6 or $7, I mean, go do it. If it's nothing else out, like, I was tempted to go see Run All Night, the Liam Neeson movie, and I'll probably see it eventually. But if it's anything, if it's anything that's like playing that you're kind of, you know, because right now I was choosing between the Lazarus Effect and the Duff, and I was almost gonna see the Duff. I think I told Crystal, who's a listener on the show, I was probably gonna wait till Blu-ray Redbox. And the Duff, I'm going to eventually see it. And we talked about it on Caitlin's episode, Caitlin Bailey. I think that's episode 108. And we mentioned that. So I'll probably get around to seeing it. Maybe seeing something before a show. But I went to this movie theater that I had never been to, the Showcase Cinema. And they're affiliated with movietickets.com. And they also have a rewards program, too. And it was pretty nice. I mean, they had a little restaurant, a little cafe in there. They had their, you could get pizza, you could get a burger, and like their, I guess more of like a fast food counter. And then they had the standard snacks, and you could get points. So what I'm trying to do is get my movie theater membership game up, because everybody doesn't have an AMC. They have, like, down south, they have Carmike, and I think they may have Regals down there. And then upstate, it's mainly Regals. It's pretty much, and maybe Bowtie Cinemas. So, Showcase, I think there's one in Secaucus. But I had never been to that one. But, you know, I have my options. If I go somewhere, I'm sort of like a slave to the time of the movie if I'm trying to kill time before a show. So instead of going home, I'll spend $10 or $12 to go see a movie and then, you know, go down into the city to see a show. I don't mind that. 'Cause if I go home, it's 9 times out of 10, I'm like, I'm not going back out. Fuck my dreams, you know. So yeah, go see The Lazarus Effect if you're looking for something to see and you're unsure. I'm not a big horror movie guy, but I really enjoyed it. So I thought it was a fun movie. I was entertained. You're listening to a guy that's 35, that's been up really early in the morning, and I did not fall asleep in the movie theater. And hey, you know, I was proud of myself. I was pretty proud of myself. And then, like, a fat boy, non-fat boy thing, I went to, because I was trying not to eat like fast food shit during the week. So they had some temptations. They had Elevation Burger out there. I've only been there one time, to one of the locations one time. And I guess it was all right, but it, you know, I was like, okay, I'm not going to do that. I went to Yard House. Yard House is a chain where it's like a bar, like a restaurant, bar restaurant, where they make their own beers and shit like that. I was like, I'm going to get a salad. But I didn't see anything that I wanted. I was like, can I just get a house salad? Can you double up on the house salad? And she said, the server asked, if I wanted to do that. And I was like, yeah, why not? And give me like some chicken and put some blackened chicken in it. She said, oh, we could do blackened chicken. We could do grill, crispy. I was like, oh, I'll do blackened. And we did that. I had a big ass salad. That shit ended up being like $20. Like 24. I was like, what the fuck? But I know when you do shit like that, like they'll overcharge you. So maybe the next time if I do something like that, I'll just do a regular house salad and just have one piece of chicken on it. I mean, I overdid it, but I mean, it wasn't a steak. It wasn't a cheeseburger. But I just hate when you pay. I was kind of mad at myself that I did that shit. I was mad about that, and I hightailed it down to the city and did a big effing deal. Good times. And what else? What else? There was somewhere else I wanted to go within that frame. I'm not 100% sure where it was. So I could talk about, you know what? I'll talk about another movie and then I'll talk about a couple current event things, maybe a little bit of sports, and then we'll close it out. How about I do that? So let's just do a reset. This is episode 110 of the Mundane Festival. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. This is Sunday, March 15, 2015. I'll tell you about another movie that I saw a couple weeks ago that I was pleasantly surprised by. It's a movie called The Good Lie, and it's starring one of my bays, Reese Witherspoon. And this was the movie I thought that was going to be an Oscar contender. But Reese, she was in it, but she really wasn't. It was sort of like, it's about, okay, four young Sudanese refugees known as the Lost Boys of Sudan are helped by Carrie Davis, a brash American woman, after they win a lottery for relocation to the United States. And this is, Reese Witherspoon played Carrie Davis, and these kids, Read up on the Lost Boys of Sudan. These guys that kids that lost their parents in war, and they walked so far across the continent of Africa, and they became refugees. And it's almost like a snapshot. You can't tell too much in a movie that's less than 2 hours, but it's a real good. It's a feel good story. And on the surface, it's sort of like a white savior movie, which I thought it was going to be. Because when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, shit, Reese is helping out these African boys. This is going to be some Oscar shit. And it's produced by the people that brought you The Blind Side and all that shit. So it has, you know, that's involved. And I was like, oh, shit, Reese is going in. But it's not really that. I mean, you get elements of that, but the climax of the movie is very surprising, and it has something to do with the title of the film. And it was very heartwarming. It was very, it threw me for a loop, because I was just sort of like, oh, this shit, she gonna help these African people, these African boys, and then, you know, she gonna find fulfillment and shit. And then, like, I might cry a little bit and shit. And I'm going to act like I'm going to try to be tough, but some tears might fall. The room might get a little dusty and shit. So, you know, whatever. So, yeah, but it was good. I didn't cry. And I'm not saying that it's not, you know, I just didn't. I just wasn't in that space to cry. I wasn't in the right headspace to cry about it. But it was a good movie. I liked it. Again, you're paying $1.50. You're going to Redbox, and it's like, all right, okay. You know, it's a feel-good movie. Really sweet. There were some moments that danger was involved, and I was like, oh, fuck, is this going to, please, God, don't let this. And so there's a couple moments like that that are pretty tense. But it's definitely worth seeing. I mean, it's good. And I think if this comes on cable or Redbox, I would recommend it. If you want to feel good, you know, it's a feel good movie is what it is. So The Good Lie, Reese Witherspoon, and some unknown actors, African actors. Yep. Good movie. Let's talk about this SAE fraternity in Oklahoma, at the University of Oklahoma. Not surprised that they were racist. I wonder why somebody recorded that. I mean, if they didn't record that, you know, it would be, you know, you probably wouldn't hear, you wouldn't hear anything about it. But I guess they were singing the racist, there'll never be a nigger in SA, there'll never be a nigger, something hanging from a tree or some shit like that. I was not surprised by it. I was not outraged. But the sad thing about it is those people, which Bomani Jones had the best take that I heard on it, on his podcast. He was talking about, you know, those are people that are going to be gatekeepers with these big jobs. They're going to be senators. They're going to be lawyers. They're going to be in the private sector, making these decision makers that can keep you out of the loop if you're black and you're brown and you're just a minority trying to come up through the system the right way and never had anything handed down to you, and you're coming up, and then these are the people that are maybe not going to let you pass through because of your skin color. And that's what the sad thing about it is. It's not necessarily the visceral hate that they have. It's power. It's an institutional thing. And that's what's sad about it, because it just goes to show you. It just goes to show you that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done, and there needs to be more dialogue about it. And it's just really, it's really sad. It is sad, but I wasn't like, oh Lord, they hate us. I already know they hate us. But yeah, like, those are the people that make those decisions, and they make laws, and they hire people. And those are it's like that Skull and Bone shit. It's like that movie, The Skulls, with Joshua Jackson. Like the Black Hill Harper got killed in that shit. I was mad as fuck when that happened. I went to go see that movie. I went on a date to see that with a girl to see that movie. And I was like mad as shit because Hill Harper died in that. And he had the weird, what did he have? He didn't have braids, but he had I don't even know if they were the twist or whatever. I don't know, but he died in that shit, and I was mad. Paul Walker was in that too, RIP. Good ass movie, man. That was one of those movies that they came out in the early, when you would have a star of a TV show, they put him in a movie to see how it would do. And that was a good ass movie. Katie Holmes did that in Abandon. I thought that was good. I was reading her Wikipedia page earlier this morning. I got a bit where I talk about Katie Holmes. It's nothing bad about her, but I was just looking at her wiki. You know how you look at a famous person's wiki and you're just like, oh, this shit, I remember that. And they dogged a lot of her movies, man. I'm sidetracking like a motherfucker, but Skulls, it reminds me of that, because those people are the decision makers, and they keep you from having a job, and they keep you from elevating, keep your progression. They hold you back from achieving your version of the American dream, And that's something that a lot of people are afraid of. People are not necessarily afraid of, but they're when that gets exposed, it makes everybody else look bad. And you can't hide from that shit because you know it's there. It's just like in Selma, where regardless of what they say about that movie, whether the historical inaccuracy of the speeches, like that shit on that bridge fucking happened. Them not letting people vote in the grandfathered stuff and the when they made Oprah recite all the states and try to make her name all the senators and all that shit. Those were things that were roadblocks that were put in the way from these people letting the black people vote. And to just to exercise their privilege, their right to vote. And so it's a thing that's very dangerous when you see something like that. And I'm glad it was exposed, but just the fact that they said nigger wasn't hurt me, but it just made it did. If you think the more that I think about it, just it kind of makes me sad, man. It makes me sad. And they, you know, they kicked the kids off campus, and I think they expelled some of the kids. There's probably going to be some lawsuit shit that happens. There was a recruit from a guy that signed a letter of intent. It might have been a kid. I don't know. Michael Felder would know. I don't want to Google it, but there was a kid that was going to go, because I don't want to break the momentum of the show. But there was one kid that, now I want to do it. There's one kid that was supposed to go to Oklahoma, and after this shit broke, he rescinded his agreement to go to Oklahoma. Oklahoma's a really big school. I gotta find this. I'm gonna find this. Hold on, you guys. All right, I found it. Okay. So the heading says, racist SAE frat video costs Oklahoma a top football recruit. Okay. The video of Sigma Alpha Epsilon University of Oklahoma chapter cheerfully chanting the N-word with a riff about lynching has now hit the Sooners where it hurts, football. On Monday, top football recruit Gene DeLance decommitted from Oklahoma 2 days after affirming his decision to play for the Sooners. He cited personal reasons, but later acknowledged that the racist video was the driving factor. DeLance, a junior offensive tackle from Mesquite, Texas, that sounds like your city's named after a barbecue flavor, is ranked a four-star recruit by 247 Sports. The number 16 offensive tackle and the 167th overall prospect in the class of 2016. He'll be fine. Oklahoma's loss is some other team's gain. But it has to sting Oklahoma. Later Monday, DeLance told a Dallas TV station that the University of Oklahoma had felt like home and that the football staff had always treated me like family. But the video changed his mind, even though the university boarded up SAE on Monday and kicked everyone out. I'm glad the way they handled it, but still, that's a bad downside for me, he explained. Watch DeLance bid the Sooners farewell below. Let me see if I can get the audio, if it works.
Actually, Coach Stoops and all the other staff, that was real welcoming. They treated me like family as soon as I got on campus. They've been recruiting me really hard, so yeah, I loved it. And I just felt like that was home back in November, and it really was from the get-go. You know, it was very disturbing. I never thought that stuff was still trending as much as it was back then, or it could keep repeating itself, and it was very disturbing. I didn't like what's going on. I'm glad the way they handled it, but that's still just a bad downside to me. I really didn't like things being around the bush with me. I wanted to be direct, and you know, I just was notified by the coaches this morning. They reached out to me, sent me a couple messages. They can't call me. I only can call them. So it was very bad. I was hoping they'd let me know ahead of time what's going on. If they would have did that, I would have been very calm with it. But I mean, I wasn't notified. I just had to find out on my own by a lot of TV.
Good for you, brother. That's what's up, man. See, it's gonna hurt them in the pockets, man. You might have a lot of kids that decide not to go to that school. I would basically just say, frats, keep your racist shit hidden, so you can get these guys to play for you. It's bad. I mean, frats. I was never a fan of fraternities anyway. I've seen School Days. I've seen the episode of New York Undercover where there was a frat. Some frat killed this guy and it was black. I'm saying black and white. I just don't get it. I don't get, like, and when Ray was on the show, basically, you know, she was talking about, like, these different clubs to, and you spending all this money that could be going towards your tuition for these little clubs, and just because you don't have the money, then you're an outsider. And you're not like every, you're an other. And you're not like everybody else. So we talked about that. You, not only are you trying to get your education at a competitive school, now you got to worry about class. And there was a situation like FAMU, but that was bad. This was a ban, but that's still a ban at an HBCU. That's essentially a frat. That's another club. Shit, the band's more popular at most HBCUs than the actual football team. And they made a movie about it. They made Drumline and they made what I heard is a shittier version, a shittier sequel. Drumline is not shitty. Drumline, the original, was fucking awesome. But then they made a sequel that people said was shitty. It's still on my DVR. I have not watched it yet. But whatever. I'll get to it maybe. There was a kid that I went to high school with that graduated with my cousins 2 years ahead of me that got beat up really bad at Maryland Eastern Shore. And that was supposed to be a fraternity. So for the most part, a lot of that shit is kind of like bad news. Just fucking go to school, get yourself a group of friends and get your degree and be out, you know. You don't have to deal with that other social shit. You know, form your own clubs and all of that. It's starting to make people investigate having these fraternities, period. I saw a tweet from Brandy Brown, friend of the podcast. She said something that her school, Williams College, got rid of frats, and, you know, in sororities and whatnot. Now, that's what she said. It was her tweet. But I think schools need to examine this. That's not going to get rid of the racism. But I'm glad that this got exposed so people can be aware of this stuff that happens. And people understand that, you know, you can't. We're in a climate where you can't go around saying shit like that anymore. And people will not do business with you. And people don't want to be associated with that bullshit anymore, or at least be better at hiding it. Like, is what you need to say. It's like that. It's like that Patrice O'Neal bit. This racism that I can't put my finger on, that I can't really, define, because it's hidden. That's the racism that's the most destructive. When it's subtle, at least with some people, you know where you stand. You know that they don't like you, but it's the subtle, subversive shit that's the most dangerous. And I've dealt with that. Everybody, if you got some brown or black skin on you, you probably dealt with it. And then just the racism on Facebook, man. That some people and people that are my friends on Facebook, the people that I look at their feed. And they have something to say that's like, damn, this shit is kind of racist, man. Do I really want to fuck with this person anymore? Jesus Christ. Because sometimes it's people that you kind of know. And it's like, I'm kind of like Andy Klein. He would say, I'm not going to delete anybody, I'll unfollow them so I keep my get my numbers up, get my numbers right. There was an incident in Brooklyn last week, where at the McDonald's brawl, where really was like five or six girls beating up another girl, and then they robbed her, took her phone and stuff. And it's basically, it's essentially a World Star Hip Hop video. And somebody on Facebook posted, this is how I found out about it. I got a text from a buddy and he said, yo, I can't fuck with X anymore. And I was like, what happened? And I looked at X's timeline and X put a post about the brawl and shit, the McDonald's brawl. And I was like, oh shit. And I was like, well, that person kind of basically the person was like, where's Al Sharpton in this? How come this black girl's getting violated and he's not campaigning about that, or he's not in the situation? And I let all of that, I just looked at the comments and everybody that I was like, oh, and I was like, oh, okay. I wrote back to him and we chopped it up. We talked about the shit. Me and one of my buddies talked about it on the phone. Looked at it and I'm looking at the situation and the police within that day that the post happened, the police arrested somebody, but it was still people arguing and shit about the Al Sharpton. Like, white people don't like Al Sharpton. And there's black people that don't like Al Sharpton. Really? He's done some shady shit in the past. They got affiliations with him and the mafia. They did an SNL sketch about it. All that shit. But he does fight for some good causes. And actually, people were talking, oh, he was down in Ferguson, he was a Trayvon. Well, there would have been no trial. What's the motherfucker that shot, killed him? Zimmerman. There would be no Zimmerman trial if people like Al Sharpton didn't help to make it happen along with the other people. He was just kind of at the forefront. Mike Brown's parents called Al Sharpton and had him come to Ferguson. They asked for him to be there. And yeah, he's got his platform and there's money involved, but a lot of people do shit like that, but they just don't like Al Sharpton. And the homie, I was looking at the feed, shout out to the homie Justin Williams, who's like one of the smartest people that I know, also a friend of the podcast. He said, what you're really saying is that you white people want their own Al Sharpton, but you already got it. It's Sean Hannity. And that's what he said about the situation. And then, cause it's hard to argue. I don't like arguments on Facebook. If I argue about something, it might be like, I really don't argue about sports, but the last thing it might have been, I posted something about Kanye West, something that Dan Le Batard said. And he said, you know, and I think I might have mentioned it on the show before. He said, if there's any racism in you, Kanye West will bring it out. Like, it'll eventually get, I just don't fucking like him. And I think that's kind of, there's some truth in there. But people kind of got sized over that. They got hyped about that. But for the most part, the last thing I really remember arguing about prior to that was the ending of The Last of Us and how it was like a heated discussion about whether Joel was selfish or not and blah, blah, blah. So I'll do stuff like that. I'll be like, oh, you know, mainly me on Facebook. If you're friends with me on Facebook, I'll mainly say something about a current event issue. I'll try to make a joke about that, or I will post new music that I like. I'll post a YouTube clip or somebody that I'm into that maybe other people haven't heard of. And I'll try to post that to get people to raise awareness and stuff like that, man. I try to keep that shit light, but racism on Facebook, man, it just makes you reevaluate. Do I want this person as my friend? You know, with these thoughts that this person has, like, are you, you hate Al. Like, where's Al Sharpton in a situation that he doesn't need to be in just because, like, a black kid got beat up? That's basically, I think I just said it earlier. It's essentially a world star hip hop video that people, the perpetrators got in trouble and they got arrested. I think 5 of the 6 people that were involved were arrested. And there was this one girl who's 17 years old that was the ringleader. She has a rap sheet of where she beat up her grandmother and she stabbed her brother in the head or some shit. Like, it's really crazy. And the police were on it. NYPD was on it this time. And they did what they were supposed to do. And they caught one girl was trying to escape to get to Jamaica. They caught her in Atlanta, I believe. So they were on it, man. So it's nothing. What can you say? It's just you just get annoyed. You change the fucking channel. You get annoyed by Al Sharpton. You don't have to listen to that dude. You don't have to listen to anything that you don't want to, especially in this day and age. This isn't Nazi Germany. Was that a line on Drop Dead Gorgeous? Like, this isn't a beauty pageant. This is Nazi Germany. You know, it's not that. So if you don't like Al Sharpton, you don't have to look at it, but don't come up with these bullshit posts about something that he's not even involved in or doesn't need to get involved in. Just because I think when people do that, that shows their true colors, man. It shows their true colors, and it's colors that I don't like to see, you guys. It's not something I'm not really a fan of. Okay, let's lighten it up a little bit. NFL free agency, you guys. Wow. A lot of moves going on. One of the biggest ones I would say would probably be, I guess, LeSean McCoy, the Eagles letting him go to the Bills. Bills might be pretty nasty, man. If they get, so they got Sammy Watkins at wideout. They got McCoy at the running back. They got Mario Williams on the front line of the defense. And I don't know who's going to throw him the ball. Did they get Matt Castle? Matt Castle and EJ Manuel, I rooted for him. I don't know if he's a backup or if he's a starter. And people have told me that he doesn't have it. I don't think it's over for him, but we'll see. AFC East, they're the Jets got Revis back, they got Cromartie back. They got Brandon Marshall, so maybe it won't be boring to have to watch them on Sundays, because that'll be who I have to watch. I mean, I get Red Zone, but, you know, that's what people are going to be talking about. So I'm just hoping that the Jets play well. The Jets and the Giants, I hope they play well this year, because it's a happier – the radio that I do listen to will be better. The sports radio I listen to will be better because I live in the New York area. And Dominican Sue to the Dolphins. They got rid of Mike Wallace. They're making some moves. That makes their front line better. That makes their cornerbacks get freed up. There's a theory that if your defensive line is good, then you know, people don't really know who the cornerbacks are, who the DBs are. Talking shit about the Redskins trying to get Mariota. We'll see. And they want to get rid of RG3. If they get rid of RG3, I hope they don't. But if they get rid of him, I just wish RG3 the best and wherever he goes. And I will continue to root for him. But whoever you get to quarterback the Redskins, you got to get an offensive line. That has to be addressed. It has to be addressed. You have to get an offensive line, and otherwise you're going to have another broken up quarterback. Everything just seems like an arms race now, and that makes it I get excited to just see all the trades happening. Jimmy Graham going to the Seahawks. That's pretty sexy, because not only do you have a solid wide receiving core, but you got a safety valve in Jimmy Graham. Russell Wilson has that safety valve that he could get the ball off to Graham, who's like this not really a wide receiver, not really a tight end, kind of like a tweener, like a hybrid. What do they call him? They call him a gadget receiver, kind of like a Percy Harvin, who the Bills picked up. Did the Bills get him? I want to say they did. 1 year contract, right? Yep. So if he gets his shit together, he's a slot, got another option. I think Matt Castle is a quarterback now. So, you know, we'll see. I just saw a lady that I worked with in theater in Chicago who's doing a commercial for, it's on mute though. It's like a Verizon commercial. That's what's up, man. I'm seeing people that I know on TV doing commercials, working. When am I going to see it by myself, you guys? Anyway, so where was I before I had that little breakdown? Matt Castle, everybody says he couldn't get the ball down the field. And Dwayne Bowe, who was a wide receiver for the Chiefs, I don't think he had any touchdowns last year, or very few touchdowns, and the tight end got all the receptions. I'm just talking out of my ass, but I think for the most part I'm right. Yeah, they did get him. Oh shit. Is Tyrod Taylor serious competition for Matt Castle, EJ Manuel in Buffalo? Rex Ryan says yes. So there's just like so much. You know, this is what I like about NFL free agency, how any free agency, basketball. See, one of the things, the NFL, it's harder to read what's going to happen because there's so many variables NFL free agency, I'm trying to make sure I got the wording right. There's so many variables at stake. Like, okay, you get a big name guy, but let's say you're wide receiver, like you get Ndamukong Suh, but let's say your Tannehill gets hurt or something happens. So many things have to work well in order for you to have not only a good season, but to just make it to the Super Bowl. There's so many things that have to happen. Like if you in the NBA, one trade could change everything. Like LeBron going to Cleveland, that wasn't a trade, but free agency makes that team a finals contender. And then the trades that they made to get Shumpert, Mozgov, and J.R. Smith, I mean that puts them in the conversation of being a championship team. We'll get to that a little bit, but the NFL, it's so much fun. All free agency in the NBA and the NFL, it's so much fun because you get to hear grown men tweet and talk, get on TV, and just, it's basically gossip. Dungeons and Dragons fantasy football for nerds and jocks. Like it's so much fun. And just like, well, I heard that he didn't want to go there because Frank Gore was on his way to go to the Eagles, and then he ended up going to Indianapolis, which I personally think if he goes to Indianapolis and he's got some juice left in him, 1 or 2 years, they might go to the Super Bowl, man. Cause that offensive line for the Colts, they block for my man Andrew Luck. They love that guy. It could be pretty. They could. They could be in the Super Bowl next year. What was I saying? Yeah. Oh, so Frank Gore was on his way. He's on his way to the Eagles, and then he just goes signs with the Colts. And I think this is me gossiping. I think that I heard someone write that that LeSean McCoy told Frank Gore to not go there. And I thought that shit was funny. And so the Eagles get DeMarco Murray. It's just kind of weird. So you let McCoy go only to get another, like the guy that was the best running back in the league a year or two ago. And then DeMarco Murray, DeMarco Murray, is he the same guy? I don't think he's the same type of runner. I think he's more of an every down back. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. It's an arms race, and I love it. It's fun. So we'll see what happens this year. We'll see what happens in the draft. I think that's in another month or so. Now they're trying to say Mario is the best quarterback in the league after it was going to be the best quarterback in the draft. Sorry. I don't know, man. It's the most wonderful time of the year for sports to me. Basketball, March Madness, I don't really give a shit about. I was watching a game and Notre Dame and North Carolina were playing in the ACC championship. How did Notre Dame? I just, for a casual fan viewer, it was kind of weird that Notre Dame won the championship and Maryland is in the fucking Atlantic 10 conference now. I mean, I knew that they did conference shifts and realignments, but I was like, what? I was like, I don't give a shit. I don't really care. I'll watch the Final Four probably, but I'm not filling out a bracket. I don't really care. If Kentucky wins all of the games, that would be neat. I don't think that's happened in a long time, but other than that, I really don't care about them exploiting these kids with the NCAA does. And these coaches getting this money, you know, I don't really care. And, the Vikings get Mike Wallace. So, and they got rid of Greg Jennings. So Mike Wallace is a weapon for Teddy Bridgewater. Got to see what Adrian Peterson's going to do. Are they going to re-sign him? You know, I don't know. I don't know, you guys. It's going to be fun. Basketball, NBA. NBA's looking good. They're talking about the MVP, who the MVP candidate is. I think they want anybody but LeBron James. He should always be in the conversation, but I think it's coming between James Harden, Steph Curry, and Russell Westbrook. I think it's going to come down to them. And LeBron's going to be fourth in the equation, even though I don't think it's right. But it's hard to argue with LeBron goes to that team. Like I said a couple minutes ago, LeBron goes to that team. They're an NBA Finals contender now. Westbrook has had to do so many things. He's had to have 9 triple doubles in order to keep his team relevant, to keep his team in the playoff race. He's had to, as we say in DC, heist like a mug. He had to heist like a mug to get this team right, young. And people are saying, what's going to happen when Kevin Durant comes back? Steph Curry, best player on the best team right now. You know, he's become one of the best ball handlers. His game has evolved so much that he's more than just a 3-point shooter. That's the fun thing about him, that he can make those threes. I love Steph Curry. If he were to win that, that would be awesome. I would love that. But I just I was talking to Paul Verzi last night, also a friend of the podcast. This has been a name I've name dropped some of the guests that have some of my guests that have been on the show. We were talking last night. I feel like I want Golden State to be for real, but I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know if they're for real. I've been saying this for months. I want them to prove me wrong. I want them to take it to the finals. Can they beat the Spurs? I don't know. In a 7-game series. I don't know. I would like to be proven wrong. Verzi says Cavs Spurs in the finals. I wouldn't argue against that. But you might want to have you. I think it's in the West, especially if Dwight Howard comes back and chemistry's not messed up. I don't know what the timetable on him his return is, but I would say if he comes back and doesn't ruin chemistry, you got to account for the Rockets. So anywhere between the Rockets, Spurs, and the Warriors. And on the East is so, like, the Bulls are out of it. Although I think they can still give, they still give the Cavs a run for their money. Anything can happen. But that's a clearer path. The Wizards, I was thinking that they were going to go deep. I think they're banged up. I don't know. I think who do the Cavs play? They're either going to play maybe the Hawks. Maybe I gave you three on the West. So it's probably the Cavs, the Hawks, maybe the Wizards. Maybe we'll see. I don't know. But Verzi's not, that's not a far-fetched statement of him for him to say the Cavs and the Spurs. That would be good. I mean, Kyrie dropped that 57 on those dudes in overtime. He's a stud. I don't know. That would be a great finals. That would be sick. So we'll see, man. This is an exciting time for sports and stuff. And I feel like I've blabbed enough. I'm excited about, like I told you last week, excited about Kendrick. He released that King Kunta song a couple days ago. It sounds good. I'm just really don't want to listen to any more songs until I hear it within the context of the album. That's where I'm at with it right now. But I probably will listen to it anyway if stuff gets leaked or. But I'm just gonna try not to. I mean, maybe I'm looking forward to obviously Action Bronson. And I think Action Bronson. I was talking to a buddy about him, and I think if he plays his cards right, he could be the king of New York. Like he's got the charisma and the talent. There's a lot of talented dudes, rappers in New York, but I think he can take it to the level where it's like he's got the charisma too, that just makes that like a lot of people like this dude, and he's. Shit, he's probably selling out both of those shows at Terminal 5. The one show got sold out. It sold out so quick that they added another show, and I'm sure that's going to get turned. That's going to get sold out. Like, what is that, like 3,000 to 5,000 people in that motherfucker? That's whatever. So that dude's great, and I'm looking forward to hearing the whole project of that. And you guys, I think that is it. I'll give you some more plugs. I'm going to be at Lucy's Lounge in Brooklyn, New York on March 25th at 8 o'clock p.m. The big show with Bill Burr, Paul Verzi, myself, and more other great comedians at Levity Live in West Nyack, New York at 8 o'clock p.m. That's the Kevin Longto Memorial Scholarship Fundraiser. April 10th, I'll be at QED Astoria in Astoria, New York at 7 p.m. I'll be at Kings County Saloon on April 14th at 9 p.m. April 21st, Lot 45 in Brooklyn at 9 o'clock p.m. April 23rd, I'll be at Steel Stacks in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania at 8 o'clock p.m. working, opening for the great Carmen Lynch, friend of the podcast. I'll be at Caroline's on Broadway in May 6th at 7:30 p.m. More dates to come and all that jazz. So again, if you're a fan of the show, rate, review it on iTunes, Stitcher, let everybody know why you like it, spread the word, retweet, share it, like the Facebook page and all that jazz. And I will talk to you all next week. Thanks for listening, everybody.